You believe you have your life goals complete, a loving relationship and two small children you adore. Then tragedy strikes as people around you die. Your world is completely destroyed when in your grief and confusion at your loss, your relationship breaks down. You eventually learn to live a somewhat normal life, until one day the police come knocking at your door and you find out someone else has died. What is eventually revealed is far more horrifying than anything you could have ever imagined. This is the case of Jordan Monaghan, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Murder Me Monday podcast. I am Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello.
The intros, man, they always start off really happy, like a self-help, going to big you up, be excited about life, and then it's just depressing. People died, your kid's dead, you're short, life's sad. We don't
normally do trigger warnings. I mean, why would we? Everybody, if you're listening to a true crime podcast, you know why you're here. But this one does cover child murder, which some listeners may find upsetting. Thank you again to another listener who brought this one to my attention. It's recent, and I almost guarantee if you ever saw the very brief newspaper articles, you've probably forgotten it. There's a distinct lack of detail in some places, and that is because there were survivors of this monster who were children, and obviously the courts have to protect their identities, so names have not been released. It's a horrible case. Deliberate manipulation of vulnerable people, coercion and other control methods are just the tip of the iceberg. Most people's instincts are to help or protect smaller, fragile beings, animal or human. We can all lose our tempers and lash out when we shouldn't. But deliberate acts of cruelty or, as in this case, multiple attempts at murder, some successful, we cannot comprehend. Mental illness or personality disorder would be our usual guess for motivation, wouldn't it? So let's find out if the word psychopath was created with this guy in mind, as the phrase serial killer certainly was. Jordan Joseph Monaghan. We know virtually nothing except there is at least one sister, and he was born in July 1991. Lived in the northwest of England, Blackburn in Lancashire. To get an idea, it's about 21 miles northwest of Manchester, an industrial town with a population of roughly 121,000. There's obviously a lot more to the town, but they're big into football with Blackburn Rovers, which even I had heard of, and won some big trophies. What I didn't know was that the town had an Olympic-sized ice rink, and they've actually got two ice hockey teams which play in the National League. So Jordan is described as a digger driver, or more often, a construction worker in some news reports. His LinkedIn profile had him as a project manager, which is a very different career path.
Do you have to set up a LinkedIn profile, or is it kind of made for you? Because I've not made one.
No, you have to make your own.
So he chose to make one?
Yours.
Okay.
I believe that's been, a lot's been glossed over on the work front, but I'll cover that off later. Jordan, at the age of 17, gets engaged to a girl called Laura in 2008. We know little about Laura, but with a bit of maths, we're able to work out she's roughly 2 years younger, so 15 or 16 when they get engaged. We have her saying that she'd had a difficult childhood and just wanted her children to have a life that she'd never had. She'd actually known Jordan for many years as she was best friends with his sister.
I mean, it always works really well when two very young kids in potentially poor areas want to have young kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's never gone badly in all of history, right? Never. Mm.
They have a son together, Logan, who was born in November of 2011. So Laura would have been about 17 or 18, probably. But the following year, the relationship between Laura and Jordan was in trouble. And by the 23rd of September, Laura had had enough and tried to finish it with Jordan. Probably lots of shouting and storming out of rooms and no one really taking any notice of a toddler who was 10 months old when, according to Jordan, Logan managed to climb up onto a mantelpiece and get hold of a packet of paracetamol tablets, which is acetaminophen for our US listeners, Tylenol, basically.
It's not a fucking Easter egg hunt. He didn't purposely climb up a counter to grab ibuprofen.
Yeah. Paracetamol, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. Same difference.
Yeah, but this is according to Jordan. So off to hospital, as Laura couldn't be sure if Logan had taken any of them. Doctors couldn't find any evidence of any overdose, so he was discharged back to his parents.
He then get in trouble, or they get in trouble for allowing kids to have access to that stuff. says keep out of reach of children and animals.
Yeah, I actually got that down. I didn't know whether that would have triggered any Social Security safeguarding worries, or social services rather. One accident, told to be more careful with an active child, cupboard locks probably, keep it out of the way. I don't know. This was a few years ago, don't forget. But that was scary enough for Laura to agree to stay with Jordan and give things another go. Their daughter Ruby was born in December of 2012. So Jordan is the father of two at the age of 21. Laura's going to be, 19-ish, thereabouts.
So they've got two young kids.
13 months apart. Yeah, that's a handful. On December the 15th, 2012, one-week-old Ruby was taken to A&E at the local hospital with an infection and discharged the same day. 5 days later, was seen by a GP for an infection in her fingernail. 29th of December, Laura was upstairs when Jordan called her downstairs saying Ruby was breathing funny. Ruby was pale with blue lips. An ambulance was called and she was taken to hospital where she stayed in for 2 nights under observation. The initial diagnosis was that Ruby had suffered a temporary pause in her breathing and consultants later diagnosed early bronchitis. But she continued to improve and was discharged on December the 31st without any medication being prescribed. They go home and Laura and her sister were upstairs sorting out the baby's room when Jordan hollers again. Baby breathing funny. They go down to find Ruby laying on a playmat with blue lips. After only just coming back from the hospital, Laura very probably thought it was just a funny turn and she would recover quickly, which she did. Laura, very probably shattered by dealing with a newborn who was ill and a toddler, was more than happy when Jordan said, "Off you go to bed, I'll stay up and do the night feed." Laura left the living room with her daughter asleep in her Moses basket beside her father at roughly 12:30 p.m., so 30 minutes into the new year. In the early hours of New Year's Day, Laura was woken by Jordan shouting, "You need to get down, I don't think Ruby is breathing." Ruby was in her Moses basket, looking pale and not responding, and an ambulance was called as Jordan performed CPR on his daughter. Paramedics took her to hospital and she was diagnosed with cardiac respiratory arrest. Doctors could find no physical indications or injuries to cause her rapid deterioration less than 24 hours after she'd been discharged. And despite emergency treatment, she did not recover consciousness and was pronounced dead at 2:45 a.m. on New Year's Day 2013, aged 24 days. Jordan later told police he had found Ruby in her Moses basket not breathing and a sudden death investigation was begun. But a post-mortem examination concluded Ruby had died from acute bronchopneumonia. Absolutely tragic. Laura, not surprisingly, had a mental breakdown and ends up in a psychiatric unit. But the ever-loving and supporting Jordan visit her every day.
Was there any suspicion at this point?
Not at that stage, no.
Even from Laura?
Not at that stage, no. So, of course, Jordan wore her down and Laura took him back again. After all, who else would understand what she'd just gone through except him? Seems they moved to a place called Chapel Street, still in Blackburn, on July the 25th, 2013, when Laura had had enough again and wanted out and wanted to end it with Jordan. The next day, Laura goes out, leaving Logan with his dad. It's described as an outing, which could be for a coffee with a friend, who knows. Jordan rings her and says Logan has just collapsed. He's gone all floppy. So Laura dashes home and they take Logan to the hospital where he's kept in for 24 hours for observation. When questioned what had happened to Logan, Jordan replied, "He'd fallen into the sofa." But that statement without any context makes no sense, but that was what was said. Logan is released and Laura tried yet again to make a go of things. 16th of August 2013, Laura discovers that Jordan hadn't been paying the rent. That was bad enough. But she'd also found out he'd taken out credit cards in her name and had run up at least £2,000 in gambling debts. She went full on Miss Marple and followed Jordan as he visited two cash machines and withdrew money from secret accounts he'd opened.
Do you think anyone that isn't British knows what Miss Marple is?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Old lady detective.
Yeah. She confronted Jordan, telling him, I'm absolutely sick of it, before returning home to bed and texting Jordan, telling him not to disturb her. I was a bit puzzled at that statement because who had Logan? But anyway, Jordan replied by text, just think what you're doing. I love you. You love me. I don't want to lose you. All of that behaviour could be put down to coping with grief at the loss of a child, the gambling. I do understand coping mechanisms. But Laura was also understandably furious, and even more so when Jordan was claiming he hadn't actually done anything, but she had proof that he'd done stuff. 17th of August, around 2 p.m, Jordan and Logan leave home in a taxi and are dropped off in the centre of town. He then takes Logan to a local swimming pool, probably with a let's get you out from your mummy's feet and give her a break sort of thing. He is seen with Logan in a buggy as he pays the entrance fee and goes towards the changing rooms. He leaves again around about 2:30 p.m, not having gone into the water, and Logan is seen laying in the buggy with a blanket over him and the rain cover over the buggy. And I thought that would be like a sauna in there on a summer's day in August. It was warm. Jordan then heads home, walking with the buggy and Logan, and meets a friend on the way, telling him that he'd planned on taking Logan swimming but had forgotten his swimming trunks. That friend later said he thought Logan was asleep as he didn't stir. They get back to the house. Jordan tells Laura Logan is asleep, and Laura isn't worried, as sometimes toddlers can happily nap for 2 to 3 hours. I wish we could. Laura agrees that Jordan can stay until Logan wakes up and they can have their evening meal together. And Jordan says he will go and get a pizza and some paint and paper for Logan to play with when he wakes up. And it's almost farcical what actually happens next. Jordan goes out to get this pizza, place is shut, comes back with paper. Laura asks where the paint is. He asks Laura if she'd woken Logan up. She says, no, you can if you want. No, don't want to wake him up as he'll be grumpy. You wake him up when I go back out to get paint and check if the pizza place is open yet. He comes back with paint, no pizza, and asks Laura, why haven't you woken Logan? He goes back out again to get the pizza and tells Laura to wake Logan while he was out. If you're a normal person, you are thinking, of course, he wants him to be awake when he gets back with the pizza. If you're a cynic, you're seeing a pattern of wake the child, you do it. Very deliberate that it has to be Laura that wakes the child, not him.
It's like leaving brochures around with rings on, isn't it?
Yes.
When you want your partner to propose.
Yes. Very.
Oh, my ring finger looks cold. What can I do about it? Please wake Logan up. I'm going out now. By the way, have you woken Logan up? When I get back, do you want to wake Logan up?
Yeah.
And before you do that, do you want to wake him up?
Pizza, paint and paper. And he has to go out 3-4 times. So Laura lifted the rain cover on the buggy, which had been down the whole time in the house. I guess
that already is weird. Well, I know the baby's asleep and you don't want to wake it up, but why is the baby still wrapped up in a rain cover and a blanket in August in a house? It's probably pretty hot. The fucking baby's soggy at this point.
Well, yeah, you would have thought, yeah. But she immediately knew something was wrong. The hood of his jacket was up and covering half his face, and he wasn't a child to have his hood up. He wasn't that kind of child. If you've ever had toddlers, some of them will wear the hoods, some won't. She took off the blanket to see if he was breathing. He wasn't breathing. He was very pale in colour, and she instantly realised he was dead. Laura then called an ambulance and told the operator, please, my baby died. Please hurry up. My baby has died. I just found him in the pram. He's dead. Logan was taken to the hospital, but he was declared dead at 6 p.m, aged 21 months. A post-mortem by a forensic pathologist concluded that there was no evidence Logan had been subject to an assault. However, his brain was found to be remarkably swollen and large. They reunite in their grief and try to carry on. They move again, understandably, to a place called Hamilton Street, and an inquest is held in 2014 to try and find out what killed Logan. But there are no answers. The pathologist told the inquiry that hypothermia could have contributed. That's the overheating, the rain cover sprang to mind. But it doesn't leave signs that they can pick up on a post-mortem. So an open verdict was recorded. So that's actually natural causes, but they don't have a foggy what it was. And this is where reporting restrictions kick in when you're trying to research this case. 26th of September 2016, almost 3 years after the death of Logan, Jordan is looking after another child. Age and relationship we do not know. Child collapses, taken to hospital. full recovery. Nothing could be found as the cause. The same child is being looked after by Jordan, date unknown, but the assumption is around the same time, collapses again taken to hospital. Extensive tests were carried out by cardiologists, neurologists, geneticists and experts in respiratory and paediatric medicine. The doctors were unable to find any medical cause of the child's collapse, but it was agreed it was highly likely the child had been smothered. In addition, they noted that the child had not suffered any episodes of collapse while in the care of any other adult. Now, from another news report, I believe that that child was the third child of Laura and Jordan and was actually only 4 months old when the collapses happened. Social services and all and sundry must have been heavily involved at this point, but it actually gets worse. In 2017, a judge ordered that the child be removed from the mother and put up for adoption, as all the authorities believed that the father was responsible for the collapses but had no proof. The father is described as very, very dangerous and the mother so vulnerable that she could not keep the child safe from the father. And the judge hoped that therapy would eventually allow her to understand the safety of the remaining child was paramount and the risks that the father posed and how he would manipulate his way back in, no matter how much the mother said she wanted nothing to do with him. The judge recognised the amount of trauma the mother had gone through after losing two children prior, but the judge couldn't risk a third death no matter what. The baby would have been 18 months old at this point. You're probably wondering why he hasn't been arrested at this point and charged, but it's the burden of proof, beyond a reasonable doubt. My belief is that they had a lot of circumstantial evidence. Autopsy reports can be read one way by one pathologist and another way by another, but nothing concrete, and the risk of him being acquitted was too high. They're very, very wary of bringing cases like this. I've read a few whereby innocent parents have been accused and gone to prison, and years later they managed to prove it was a genetic problem that caused their children to die. So it's really, really hard, but it explains why that last baby was put up for adoption. This was 2017. Skip forward. 2018. We probably won't ever know what other information was found, but in January 2018, Jordan is arrested for the murder of the first two children, Ruby and Logan, and let out on police bail. That's all we have in the UK. It's not based on money, if anybody's wondering. It's police bail. Obviously, Jordan and Laura were definitely not together by this point. Jordan had started a new relationship with a very, very vulnerable lady called Evie Adams, who was 23. Evie had been chronically abused very young and had been put in the foster care system at the age of 12. Probably because of the police bail, they know about his relationship with Evie and go and see her. She won't hear a word said against him. So the police go to court and they have what's called a non-molestation order put in place to keep them apart for Evie's own safety. In 2019, police pulled Jordan's car over and find Evie in the car with him. He tries to tell them that the woman was just some bird I met today and that they were on their first date. Police knew it wasn't true. They tried to arrest him and he tried to bolt as far as the back seat of his own car and sits there holding a knife to his own throat. And they arrest him and they take him to court. And in January 2019, he pled guilty. He got sentenced to 12 weeks in prison, suspended for 12 months, and ordered to pay £85 costs and £115 victim surcharge. So he's out. His solicitor had Evie in court as they tried to get the non-molestation order removed, but that was refused.
You said a victim surcharge?
Yes.
Who does that go to?
Goes to the state and it pays for things like victim support groups and things like that.
Okay.
And compensation and...
To me, the way it sounded like is that he has to then pay her because in this case, she's the victim. So I'm thinking that's just paying yourself because then he would get the money back.
Yeah, no, it's not.
I thought that was strange.
No, it's a pot that they use these days.
To me, it feels like it weirdly infringes on the freedom aspect.
Yeah.
You're saying you can't be near this person, but that other person is vulnerable and can't recognize that he might be a danger. So it's kind of odd. It puts a weird taste in my mouth, but I understand why they're doing it.
Incredibly rare that they would do that. You know, like, I think it's, is it Claire's Law these days, where you've got the right to go into the police and say, I have just met somebody. I think there's something, you know, there might be something strange. Can you tell me if they've got a criminal record background for domestic violence? And they will run someone's name through the computer. If, you know, lots of proof, not just like you can wander in. And they can say, yeah, actually, they've been arrested four times for it, to protect that person. But for the fact that they've actually gone to Evie and said, this guy is dangerous, they probably couldn't tell her that he'd been arrested for the murder of his children. They probably weren't allowed to tell her that. But it seems that nobody actually knew about that.
It's strange that certain lines won't be crossed in that sense. They'll go as far as to issue a non-molestation restraining order sort of thing, but not tell her why. And I think if they'd done that, she would have understood and not.
I don't know that she would. I don't know that she would. He was her sun, moon and stars. And for the life of me, I can't work out why. Jordan gets into more bother in March 2019 and he attacks a 19-year-old lad at a house in Blackburn, gets arrested, goes on the run. Police put out a public appeal for information in the May. And again, it's also as well noted that he's breaching his non-molestation order as well as the assault. He can't stay away from Evie. Nothing I can find after that appeal for information about him. He had apparently had links from Exeter and Devon all the way up to Glasgow. He could have been absolutely anywhere. And why the hell the bail wasn't revoked for the murders, a suspended sentence should have at least been activated when he assaulted the young chap. But I don't know. It's all bloody infuriating and someone's stuffed up somewhere, I think. Evie and Jordan, they're together. You know, they went away to stay in a caravan in Blackpool on the 13th of October 2019, which would have been super cheap and bloody cold, is my thinking. They argued and it got violent. The caravan got damaged. And when they got home to Blackburn, Evie decided enough was enough. She was going to rent a place of her own and be done with Jordan. They went to stay with what are described as family members. Hers, I assume, but I don't know. But as he had previously done with Laura, Jordan talked Evie round. And by the 19th of October, they were back on. Evie started to feel unwell, telling a friend she couldn't keep food down and she had a pain in her upper abdomen. Later that evening, friends saw Jordan give Evie tablets from a brown bottle, similar to that which you'd get from a pharmacy. And the friend just assumed that they were painkillers. But the next day, Jordan messaged a WhatsApp group called UK Tablets seeking illegal prescription drugs. Then Jordan travelled to meet another group member of UK Tablets with the intention of buying diazepam and what's it called? Cameron, I can't pronounce it. Pregabalin?
Pregabalin.
Yeah, that one.
So an anti-convulsant, anti-lytic thing, so it stops anxiety and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And the diazepam is a benzo. So it's I think it's also known as Valium. There's another name for it.
Ah, right. Okay. So Evie's illness continued. And on the 21st of October, she texts Jordan, telling him, I wish I never felt like this because it's horrible. Like I can't do anything for myself. Like I'm just dying and weak. And that's what I feel like. Jordan called the doctors and spoke to a receptionist, saying he was calling on behalf of his girlfriend who was dizzy, sick and had blurred vision. An appointment was made for Evie to see a doctor at 6:30 p.m.
Everyone around this guy seems to have blurry vision, being dizzy and feeling sick and collapsing. Take the hint, stop it.
She doesn't turn up to the doctors, obviously. They tried calling her, but they didn't get an answer. Jordan later called 111. That's a non-emergency medical line for those not in the UK. Telling the operator that Evie had been vomiting since Thursday and kept falling over to one side when she walked. However, he said, although she was unwell, she was still able to do most of her normal activities. Second appointment was made for Evie with a doctor the next day. Again, Evie did not attend. Doctors tried calling again. Again, no answer. In the days between Evie not turning up and his last drug run, Jordan was again in touch with the UK Tablets group looking for Blues, which apparently was a street name for diazepam. I thought Blues was Viagra, but what do I know?
Yeah, I thought it'd be Viagra as well.
Yeah, might be a northern term. On the morning of 22nd of October, Jordan called the doctors asking for an urgent appointment for himself to discuss my depression and my sleeping. There was no mention of Evie. 7:45 p.m. on the 24th of October, Evie is discovered by a family member, blue and not moving, apparently deceased.
Is that why it's called Blues?
I don't know.
They just said she has found blue and not breathing. The people that take too much of it, they turn blue. Could be why it's called Blues.
Could be. Ooh.
That's a... You wouldn't take it, would you?
No. So paramedics are called and they arrive at 8:15 p.m. Jordan, who just come back from a trip to Wigan, presumably more drugs, tried to make out he was devastated, but the paramedic later said that he thought Jordan was putting it on when the police turned up, made out he was upset with the paramedics, but ramped it up when the police arrived. On November the 6th, Evie's friend, the same one who had seen Jordan giving her what she assumed painkillers, visited Jordan to discuss funeral arrangements for Evie. Jordan picked up a framed picture of him and Evie, ostensibly wanting it to be placed in her coffin with her. Very conveniently, a typed note fell out from behind the picture frame. The letter, which appeared to be a suicide note, had Evie's signature, but all her friends and family were, nope, she couldn't use a computer. It was a typewritten letter. Wouldn't know how to type or wouldn't know how to print anything. Just had a signature on it, but the letter itself was printed. There was also another letter in that picture frame to Evie's only child, who was young and apparently Evie adored. Yet there was no mention of her own child in that suicide note, but it did mention Jordan's two dead children, Logan and Ruby. A post-mortem examination of Evie, carried out by a Home Office pathologist, found fatal levels of tramadol and diazepam, but no evidence for stomach bug or food poisoning. Interestingly enough, it was later found that Jordan had taken Evie's phone with him to Wigan the evening that Evie had died, and there was no explanation ever given for that. I wonder if he thought he could go through her messages or stop her calling for help, or was it to write texts that later came to light that would appear again to be suicide texts from Evie to Jordan, saying she'd taken tramadol and paracetamol and wanted to die, yet he never replied to any of those. Everyone goes into overdrive on this one. Three people closely connected to Jordan are dead. Lancashire Constabulary's Force Major Investigation Team, along with the Crown Prosecution Service, are involved, and Jordan is arrested and charged on January the 18th, 2021. It takes a while, though. On the 12th of October, 2021, Jordan goes to trial at Preston Crown Court, charged with 1st of January, 2013, murder of Ruby Monaghan. 17th of August 2013, murder of Logan Monaghan. 27th of September 2016, attempted murder of child X. There's a child cruelty phase. And then the 2nd of October 2016, attempted murder of child X again. There's another cruelty charge. And then the 24th of October 2019, murder of Evie Adams.
And that child X is that third child that we don't know who it is.
Yes.
Or if it's someone else's or his, which you suspect
it
is.
I believe it's his. I've linked in the news report in on the show notes specifically because the way that news report has been written, it is telling you that it is them without being able to tell you it
They're
is them.
They're trying to hide it's the child's identity as much as possible.
Yes. But it's also about letting people know that it is him that's been doing this. No, there's no blame on Laura at all. She's just been manipulated every which way, but, you know, Sunday. They're at trial. There are witnesses galore, medical experts galore. They stated categorically that there were no genetic reasons for those children to have died, and they believed that they had both been smothered. Evie's suicide, they believed, was staged. Jordan didn't want her to leave him. Rejection.
Why would she leave him? I thought...
She'd come back from the trip to Blackpool in the caravan and she'd had enough of him because they'd had a fight. The caravan had got trashed and she said, I'm coming back, going to get myself together and I'm going to get my own place. I'm not going to live with him, not going to have anything to do with him anymore. But he talked around again. And then that's when she got sick because he can't bear being rejected.
I think it's kind of strange though how she's gone from thinking he's the sun and stars, the moon and sun sets and rises with him. To being like, nah, peace out, family, wrecked a caravan.
You don't know what was said or what's
going on. We don't know the ins and outs. No. She might have finally come around to her friends, but I've convinced her, yo, he's a knobhead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Linguistics experts stated that the suicide text was written to disguise Jordan's own style and didn't match Evie's natural style of texting.
Linguistics experts like bite people and blood people.
Maybe.
I feel like they are.
I knew you were going to say
that. I
feel
like they are. Depending on the mood, I don't type the same. I don't write the same. I'm writing down stuff here in my notepad. Between bullet points, they don't look like the same person. One looks like a child did it.
True. But that suicide note, again, they said the style did not match Evie's style. And their signature was actually a cut and paste. It wasn't even a real signature. 8 weeks it took for all the evidence to be heard. The jury took 5 days to reach a verdict. There was no smoking gun, was there? 17th of December, 2021. The jury were unanimous in their verdicts that Jordan murdered Logan, aged 21 months, in his buggy in August 2013. They also agreed unanimously that he murdered Evie Adams in October 2019 by giving her a fatal overdose of tramadol and diazepam. They returned guilty verdicts by a majority of 10 to 2 that he also smothered Ruby to death and tried to murder the third child on 2 separate occasions, again a majority of 10 to 2. Just before sentencing was handed down on the same day, it is only then that it is revealed that Jordan was actually on bail for the murder of his children. He'd kept it quiet and the press obviously actually didn't know. Before sentencing, there are victim impact statements. Laura, Ruby and Logan's mum, and Evie's family also read those out to the court. Part of the sentencing remarks from the Honourable Mr. Justice Goose were, "It is difficult to imagine why you carried out these offences, but having listened to the evidence in this trial, I am sure you are an exceptionally selfish, controlling and cruel man. The premeditation involved in this resulted in Jordan Monaghan, then aged 30, being sentenced to 27 years on each of the 3 murder charges, but with a minimum term of 40 years before he is eligible for parole, and thereafter will remain on licence for the rest of his life. So we've got 81 years, but we'll have to serve a minimum of 40. It also turned out that he'd be charged with perjury, but as he'd been sentenced, they said it was no longer in the public interest to pursue it and would lay in file.
What was the perjury for? Was
don't
that
know.
For, was that for the credit card in her name?
Don't know.
In Laura's name?
Don't know.
Or the faking of the...
No foggy. But it's left on file. I mean, it's something happened and he got out. Say it was all overturned, they could still go after him for that perjury, whatever. It's not even worth anything.
I imagine it's the credit card thing with Laura. So take it out in her name back then.
Of course, the same day, the local council where they lived announced a child safeguarding practice review, which is known as a CSPR, previously known as a serious case review, that had already been initiated, had actually been put on hold until the outcome of the trial. Remember my confusion about his job at the beginning, whether he was
a digger, construction worker.
Yeah. Well, Companies House, which is where limited companies are registered legally in the UK, had his name listed as sole director against 2 companies. May 2018, he sets up Logan Construction Services Limited, and it's dissolved in October 2019. So he named his company after his son. Look at me, I'm a good dad. The second firm he set up was L&R Construction Group Limited, incorporated on the 9th of December 2018. Initials of the son and daughter. Look at me again. Maybe. I don't know. 14th of November 2019, a recruitment company applied to have the firm wound up due to being insolvent. I got to thinking about that, knowing recruitment agencies and construction firms. My take on it was that he probably went to the agency and said, I need X amount of labourers or tradesmen for X amount of days. They would sign a contract. The agency would pay the workers as they are the employers and they're just basically hiring people out, so it would save them doing payroll and all that sort of stuff. But when the agency asked him for the money to cover their wages and their fees, he blew them off. Knowing this particular agency as I do, I bet they went and got a county court judgment against them and then immediately applied for the firm to be struck off. They're allowed to do that. However, as a limited company, Jordan would have had no personal losses from the county court judgment or insolvency unless he'd given a personal guarantee, and I doubt that he did. This is why people often set up limited companies as opposed to being Joe Public trading as building company X. They would suffer no financial loss. The problem is a lot of suppliers are reluctant to deal with or offer trading terms to sole traders, feeling that a limited company gives added protection. Really doesn't. If there's no money, there is no money. The only way he could be stopped from setting up another firm and doing it all again was him to be struck off and barred from becoming a director of a firm again. But it still doesn't stop people from doing it or using others as a front for a limited company. If people had checked him out on Companies House and did a simple street view of where the company's registered, as I did, you can see it's not a firm of accountants, which is quite common to register a limited company at. Stop strange people finding you, which is fine, all good. It's a private residential house that he actually lived at. But they could have then done a search of the land registry for £4, which would tell you who owned the house. Now, I haven't done that, as I knew that the house Jordan lived in was rented. But it could indicate that the house is, as I say, is rented rather than owned. Ergo, there's no assets behind the directors. So a personal guarantee would be useless. The guy had no money, but he kept setting up limited companies. He's putting out that he's a project manager. There's no way he's qualified as a project manager. Obviously, COVID and all sorts of things have delayed things. To this point, it's all academic. The firms have gone. There's compulsory wound up, but it'll actually take until 2026 for it to all be finalised. This didn't exactly come to light at the time that the first company had been wound up. But when he got that suspended sentence for breaching that non-molestation order, remember in 2019?
Yeah, with the car and stuff.
Yeah. His solicitor told the court that Jordan employed 87 people and they couldn't jail him as people would lose their jobs. I'm calling BS on that unless a load of people come forward to say that they work for him. And if it was true, then the company getting struck off by the recruitment agency certainly meant that they did lose their jobs. I would also love to know how he kept getting leases on rental properties. He didn't have a pot to, did he?
To piss in.
Yes. Yes. Mm. We're almost finished. But not quite. In a really weird link back to last week's update on Helen Bailey and the Diane Stewart's case, 4th of May 2022, 5 judges are due to hear challenges or appeals regarding the sentences of 5 infamous prisoners, including Ian Stewart, who is appealing his whole life tariff, and Jordan Monaghan's sentence is being appealed by the Attorney General under the unduly lenient sentencing scheme. My guess is that they want Jordan to get a whole life tariff. No chance of ever at all getting out. He's a complete and utter danger to women and children.
So the unduly lenient scheme is people that this scheme thinks about people that have been sentenced, but that it's been too lenient.
Yes.
I.e. a year. A good example, that old woman, they killed her husband and got like 6 minutes in prison.
Yeah.
And went to live on for another 8 years.
Yep. The Attorney General now can appeal that and take it to the High Court and say it was ridiculous. They should have gotten a lot more, and it does happen.
Do you think when that does happen, that is a mark against the judge?
No, not necessarily. It might be within chambers. It might be within circuits.
An official thing is, he's a piece of shit. He's not actually sentencing people. Yeah. Because I guess then that would just make judges over-sentence people to counter that, and you don't want that for obvious reasons,
no.
Do you?
No. But it's usually when there's a public outcry or there's something obvious that's...
Yeah, like a guy in the news recently that like... really badly abused his girlfriend and got an incredibly short.
Yeah, I think I know the one you took. Well, there's two of them in recent weeks, and I think they're both being appealed by the Attorney General. As I said, we may do a minisode with regard to Ian, but after finding out about this case, it may end up being a joint one because we'll have to see what happens. I would love to know more about Jordan's background, why he had such a thing about rejection, etc. I just don't know.
I was going to ask that. Do you have any information about his parents? Whether or not he came from a broken family or he had a really traumatic experience with...
There is nothing out there. They kept so much hidden because it was... Reporting restrictions were in place the whole way through. They weren't in place the whole way through, but they were obviously in place because of the children and the fact the first two, nobody knew he'd been arrested for. But I don't know why it's been missed. There's nothing out there. It's frustrating as hell. I've got some weird corners that I go into, but there's not an awful lot there.
When he was sentenced for Ruby's death, they determined because there was no genetic conditions that would have ended up with her dying. Is that what the justification was? So therefore, they think she was smothered.
Yeah, they believe both the children were smothered. There was no medical reason whatsoever that either of them died.
I was wondering if... It was just an idea that because Laura was going to leave him, Ruby then actually have a real condition and something bad happened to her. In the first place, when she went to hospital and then came back again, didn't she? And then he killed her, I assume. I thought that could have been legit. And then he saw the reaction that Laura had and then he kind of rolled with it from there. And then the same thing happened again with Logan.
But don't forget, Logan climbed up onto a mantelpiece and supposedly got those pills. That was the first time him and Laura were going to split up.
Yeah, true. So I guess he's already done it before.
It's the attention seeking something. I think he's a psychopath, the guy. He's not.
It seems really odd to me to be in a relationship with someone, have a child with them. That's sort of a lot of people's end goal, get married, etc., isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then have children with them. And then to harm and or kill the children to make that person stay with you. Surely that to me sounds like it's defeating their purpose in the first place.
But you'd be surprised how actually common that is.
But loads of couples break up when there's been the death of a child anyway because it's so stressful in the relationship.
But they're different kinds of relationships, aren't they?
Yeah, one of them might be, in this case, a genuine one, and then this one, which is incredibly manipulative and forcing Laura to stay with him, and he seems to be attracted to vulnerable people. Laura, when she was young and easily impressionable, he was only 2 years older than her, but even then, sure. Mm. And then you've got Evie, who is described as very, very vulnerable. I was curious if she had initial condition.
I don't believe so. One of the things that did come out through some of the reporting was this, say she'd gone into care at the age of 12. She'd been apparently chronically abused before that. She seems to have at some point developed a relationship with her mother again as an adult. And yet, according to Jordan, again, we don't know if this is true, Evie's mother had told Evie that the world would be a better place if you went and killed yourself.
Evie's mother said that to her?
According to Jordan, yes.
That sounds like ammo for the suicide note.
Yeah.
You can't believe that.
Yeah. I don't think there was any evidence of actually that being seen.
It's one of those really difficult problems with people that are previously abused. You'd imagine they'd be hyper aware for those situations again to not allow it to happen. But people end up falling back into the same patterns that made them that way in the first place.
Yeah.
Or made them be abused. Obviously, they're not at fault.
Mm. Right, before we go, I've got a correction and one small update I found just before recording. Cameron, do you remember episode 13, The Cult Next Door, the weird Maoist lot in London and the creepy man in charge? Aravindan Balakrishnan, a.k.a. Comrade Balala.
Wasn't it Krishnanan? Isn't there an extra N at the end?
Krishnanan, yeah. That's him, yeah.
I don't remember a single thing about the case, but I remember that name.
Yeah, well, he got 23 years in 2016 for offences including child cruelty, false imprisonment and assault. And he still had followers believing he was innocent. We reckon that he probably is responsible for a couple of murders. He died in Dartmoor Prison on the 8th of April this year, literally, just a couple of weeks ago, aged 81.
And if you want to find out more about that, you can find it in our library, episode 13.
Yeah. The correction as well. My mentioning Andrea Yates last week, and a big thank you to the listener who let me know. I did not realise, and I apologise for not looking it up. We talked about it last week, Cameron. She was convicted in 2002 of capital murder for killing her 5 children. That weird religious type thing. It was pregnancy psychosis. Postpartum psychosis, sorry. She was sentenced to life imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 40 years. Her attorneys, that weird one that was in last week's one, he actually appealed and he won and the verdict was overturned. But there was another trial in 2006. Then she was found not guilty by reason of insanity. And since January 2007, she has been at Careville State Hospital, which is a mental facility in Careville, wherever the hell that is. She can undergo a review every year to see if she's competent to leave the facility. She's now 57 years old and she opts every year to waive her right to be reviewed. She has never undergone review. She chooses to stay there to continue her treatment. She is where she needs to be, I think. Where would she go? What would she do?
She's been removed from society for so long now as well that you wouldn't know how to...
But she's also removed herself from society now.
Yeah, which shows remorse and recovery, I guess.
Yeah, she was definitely mentally ill, severely mentally ill. And finally, the victims in this week's episode who should not be forgotten. Ruby, aged 24 days. Logan, aged 21 months. Evie Adams, aged 23 years.
So that then is the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Murder Me Monday Podcast, and email us at murdermemondaypodcast@gmail.com. Like, rate, review, all that good stuff, or comments for the algorithm.
All of that stuff. We like it all. Thank you very much indeed for all of you that have left a review. We do appreciate it.
And we'll see you next time. Much love. Peace.
Bye.